Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
We are back. You are listening to America This Week. We are joined today by Robert David Sullivan, who's talking about the midterm elections, and we're very happy that we've got a couple calls on the line. So, Robert, we're going to jump right in here from somebody from your home state in Springfield, Mass. Doug, do you have a question for Robert David Sullivan?
Yeah, thank you, Father, for taking my call. I can't agree more, I think, in some points with Robert today, saying, like, the apathy of the American voter, that, you know, your vote really doesn't mean anything. And I think there's discouragement among voters is that you see the millions of dollars, as your guest said, you know, put into these campaigns, and the voters are kind of forgotten about. But I would have to disagree. I kind of laughed when you gave his biography of that newspapers and media are where people get most of their opinions unbiased, I think he said, when he writes for the Phoenix, I think the Boston Globe, which I think are pretty left-leaning things. I find it kind of funny he writes for the Globe, but yet does everything for Boston College, which is kind of left-leaning. But it kind of biased in and of itself. But I couldn't agree more with the low ratings of Congress and, you know, the president, which I think he forgot to mention, too. He's right there with low numbers as well, but you don't hear about it, you know? I think everybody on both Republican and Democrat side seems to be just playing it safe to kind of run the clock out and see who can eke out control of the Congress and maybe force more bills, you know, that get out of the House into the Senate to at least come up for a vote instead of being, you know, shared under. But I think he's right. There's such an apathy that your vote doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Well, thank you, Doug.
Robert, why don't you speak? We haven't spoken about the president and his effect on these elections. There obviously seems to be many races where people are trying to keep as much space between Obama and the candidate as possible.
Right, which is historically the norm. Presidents, I looked up, presidents always lose seats in midterm elections, especially in the sixth year of a presidency. There's only been three midterm elections since the Civil War, where the president's party didn't lose houses seats in the House of Representatives. So the midterms are usually a referendum on the president, and they usually are a thumbs down on the president, because I think partly because people who are opposed to the president are more motivated to get out and vote. There's kind of a complacency among people who put him in the first place. President Obama's ratings are, I guess, in the low 40s about now, which is low, not extraordinarily low, but certainly low enough that, like you say, candidates are not asking him to come and campaign with him. He's pretty much been avoiding congressional races. I think he's making some appearance for gubernatorial candidates, but he's kind of staying away from anything that has to do with Congress, and they're happy with it. And a lot of the attack ads for Democratic incumbents just say how much they've voted with the president, like 95%, 96%, and that is considered the most damning thing you can say about the incumbent. And when we talk about the lack of wings in the party or the kind of homogeneity of the parties now, even Democratic senators in so-called red states have voted with him almost 100% of the time, because party discipline is so tight now. But also because so few, I think the caller also mentioned about how legislation is being bottled up. So few legislative proposals are even going to the floor for a vote, that most of the times they vote with the president, it's on confirmation of judges and federal agency heads, things like that. That accounts for almost all of the votes, which is very unusual historically, but things have just come to such a ground to such a halt with legislation that, you know,
there's no movement.
They're tied to the president on a couple of big votes, but most of his proposals just don't even get a hearing now. So
they have to look at, for example, did you vote for Obama? Those are becoming campaign issues.
Right. In Kentucky, where the Senate candidate is saying, oh, secrecy of the ballot. She's the Democratic Party nominee, and she won't say whether she voted for the Democratic nominee for president.
Right, right. And, you know, it seems to me that it's also the case that this Congress is on track to be one of the least productive
yes.
in American history. And, you know, there are probably some people who are rejoicing, right? Mm-hmm. Probably saying, you know, the last thing we need is Congress, you know, being more proactive or aggressive or assertive. But it also seems, you know, that a country of 300 million people is unlikely. It's unlikely that a country of 300 million people could govern itself with
right.
these few federal laws.
And then you look at something like the Affordable Care Act, which is a very big, complex piece of legislation. When you have something like that, there's always things that come up when it's implemented
right.
that you have to address and fix. And it's certainly the case with the Obamacare or the ACA. But they're afraid to make any fixes to it because they don't want the issue to come before Congress. They are afraid to even open up the debate anymore.
Right.
And so this law that really needs to be refined and improved after we saw how it's implemented,
right.
they can't get any action on it.
Right. Well, we have another caller, Jonathan from Kansas. You are on the air with America This Week on Sirius XM 129. Jonathan, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Jonathan. Yes. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. I think that basically three things we want to put in a nutshell have to take place. One, people need to learn to recognize the difference between an issue and a problem,
mm-hmm.
because that affects your whole thinking process as to how in governance, in the positions themselves, or in a democratic republic where we've handed our personal authority as citizens, as people to these representatives, what we expect from them. So you take abortion, that's an issue. We'll never solve an issue. We can have lots of opinions on it and ideas and speak of it and learn about these frameworks to these things. But you take teenage pregnancy, now that's a problem. And it can be addressed. It can be broken down as to did this occur in a divorced home where the fellow was at home with this teenage girl while mom was working?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of ugliness can be addressed because it is a legitimate problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then that ranges across the board to many things out there today,
sure.
whether you're arguing about how tax dollars are used or whatever.
And what are the other two things, Jonathan? Yeah.
Well, the other two things are simply participation, which is being greatly undermined because of the amount of money in the process. Mm-hmm. Money is not a form of free speech. I don't care what the Supreme Court says.
Right.
And when you have decisions in our history or in the world's history, you look back at the Dred Scott decision. Yeah, it became the law, and it helped lead to a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
These things can be addressed again and again until we get them right, but it requires participation. And that leads to the last one, leadership. In a form of leadership, which we don't have today, I always start with this question. When's the last time we as a people, this nation, solved the problem? And boy, that'll keep your head scratching.
Yeah.
We need to do that.
Jonathan, there's a big race going on in Kansas right now. Are you seeing any evidence of these three pieces that you referred to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've got the money from out of state, you've got the mudslinging, and you have the lack of addressing to individual problems and the throwing around of big words, the issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Greg Orman's a billionaire. He's with Obama, yada, yada, yada. And, of course, Sam Brownback is, you know, in the hip pocket of the Koch brothers and these kind of things. And I sit there in a red state, and I'm a Democrat, but I've been a Republican and an independent. I'm a retired 20-year Marine and a truck driver. So I get a vast array of opinions and ideas before me as I work and live.
Right.
And I look at this and I say, excuse me, point of parliamentary procedure, but what about this issue, and how about the problems that structured it, and how do we attack them?
Sure,
and
sure.
People's eyes, their eyes glaze over. They're really, you know, when you pull on the emotions of people, when you say your Christian values are being threatened, and that's a general statement, And it may or may not be true in some ways, and I don't know when that was any different from the time Jesus introduced them to the world.
Okay, well, thank you, Jonathan, for the call. Appreciate it. I think we hear in his voice and in his comments the weariness that we have among the American electorate right now.
Yes, and I think he's right about issues versus problems. The political parties now are very issue-oriented and very problem-averse. They don't have the flexibility to deal with big problems because they kind of fall back on their old issues and what they think gives them political advantage.
And there's a certain, I think, intellectual bankruptcy in our national politics. It seems that ideas have been displaced by ideology.
By ideology and by short-term political gamesmanship. There's a lot of ads about Social Security this fall. Both parties claiming that the other party is out to destroy Social Security. And a lot of this comes from there's kind of a consensus that in the long run there has to be reforms to Social Security. Now, this can take the place of cutting benefits or raising the retirement age, or it can come from raising payroll taxes on the upper income people. But it seems that if you take any kind of position, you're going to be attacked as wanting to derail Social Security, which kind of puts a chilling effect on any kind of reform or any kind of working together.
Now, as we're looking ahead, you've written about the Catholic vote. This is something we talk about every 4 years, every 2 years in America. Right. Where's the Catholic vote going to go? Are we at a point where we're fooling ourselves that the Catholic vote is actually a swing vote, or do you think it could have that kind of effect this Tuesday?
I don't think it can be broken out as a particular swing vote. I mean, Catholic electorate, Catholic constituency is, polls show it's as diverse as the electorate in general.
Mm-hmm.
There may be certain social justice issues that cut a little deeper with Catholic voters, but I don't see the Catholic vote as being targeted in any way this year.
Is there a way in which it doesn't really make sense to talk of a Catholic vote? I mean, I remember Nelson Paulsby, the political scientist, once said, you know, that Catholics tend to vote first and foremost as something else, you know, as a member of a union, as a member of political class, as person, as parents, that, in other words, that their faith isn't necessarily consciously foremost in their minds in the way that maybe some evangelical Protestants vote.
I think that's true. The Catholic vote, say 50 years ago, was much more democratic, but at that time, more Catholics lived in big cities and were not that far removed from immigrant parents or their families, and as they moved out to the suburbs and they became farther removed from ancestors in other countries, they began to move more toward the Republican Party. And I think it's just because suburbanites tend to vote more Republican, and people who are in the professional classes tend to vote more Republican. And it was just a matter of, as you say, other things coming before their religious identity when they went to the ballot box.
Well, you're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're talking with Robert David Sullivan about the midterm elections and the state of U.S. politics. And, you know, I guess the question that I keep coming back to is, okay, how do we fix this?
Right.
And it's not obvious. I mean, there was an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal this morning that said, you know, one of the things that we could do is move away from the kind of perpetual campaigning that can get in the way of governing.
Right.
And, you know, we ought to amend the Constitution so that House members serve 4-year terms. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. It might have some promise. But how in the world are we going to get a supermajority to amend the Constitution in the face of all of this polarization?
Right. And I mean, senators serve 6 years and they start running for re-election as soon as they get in. So I'm not really sure that makes a difference. If anything, other democracies sometimes, you know, they have not regularly schedule elections. Elections can, you know, governments can rise or fall based on how they respond to a situation. And they don't have a permanent campaign because they don't know when the next campaign is going to be. There are some proposals to deal with spending, the great amount of spending that often comes from outside groups, but there's constitutional questions around how you can regulate that. There are things like having primaries that aren't, where the candidates are not identified by party,
right,
and they're hoping maybe more centrist or mainstream candidates will come out of that, but that hasn't really happened yet in the states that have tried it. Someone suggested a constitutional amendment that guarantees the right to vote, which would encourage participation and kind of put an end to laws that not so subtly try to reduce turnout. I don't think that would get through the constitutional amendment process,
right,
not at this point.
Right.
That's too politicized now.
Right. And some people have suggested a kind of Australian model where we have mandatory voting, and that's unlikely to go anywhere too.
Right.
I guess the reason there is that you know, if we have more people in the process, it's less likely to come down to, you know, whether you win 38 or 40% of the slice of the vote or something like that.
Right, and it's politicians hate unpredictability. So if you're going to expand the electorate, that is a scary thing. I mean, even the conventional wisdom is that the Democrats benefit from a bigger turnout, but even they get terrified at the thought of a big increase in turnout because they got put in by the current electorate. They don't want it to change.
Right.
So there's a lot of resistance there. I think somehow, as I said before, there has to be more local involvement and participation, because that's where you get more nuances.
Sure.
in the conversation, and everything doesn't come down to, oh, how is this going to affect the next presidential
right.
race?
Right.
And I think that's something you do well for us on the blog, and I want to remind our listeners that you can follow Robert David Sullivan at Robert D. Sullivan on Twitter, and the URL for his blog is americamagazine.org/wisdom. And one of the things you do is look at these local races, so to get us looking at some of these stories that are not being told.
Yes, right. Exactly. And the blog is called Unconventional Wisdom, and it's also moving to print. So
we're going to have a column in print.
Right. And so our print readers will also be able to see Robert's analysis and judge for themselves. But we're terrifically proud to have you as part of America's family, Robert. And
thank you.
And thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.